Let's go out to the ball game, boys.
Why yeah, that's good idea. Idea. Why not? Why not?
Hello and welcome to the podcast edition of Ron Kaplan's Baseball Bookshelf, your source for news, reviews, previews, and interviews with authors and artists on books, movies, DVDs, collectibles, pretty much anything to do with the national pastime. If it fits on a bookshelf, it fits here. Welcome back, everybody. This is Ron Kaplan, proprietor of the Baseball Bookshelf, and today we're going to be talking with Joseph Wallace, author of the recently published novel Diamond Ruby, which is a loose account of the life of Jackie Mitchell, the young lady who pitched very briefly back in the 1930s and has the honor of striking out Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig in a single exhibition appearance. At that point, Commissioner of Baseball Kennesaw Mountain Landis, in his usual iron-fisted style, decided he didn't want a woman making a mockery of the national pastime, so he decided he wasn't going to have any of it and banned her and all of her gender from appearing in professional games. This is Joseph Wallace's first attempt at fiction. Previously, he's known for editing the Baseball Anthology, a collection of 125 years' worth of stories and photos and cartoons and poems and other items about the national pastime. And he also edited the autobiography of baseball, the inside story from the stars who played the game. I have two libraries at home. One is up in the attic, which is where the bulk of my collection is stored, and the other is in the basement, my office. And that's where I keep the books that I refer to more often. Coffee table books, reference books, and generally things I pretty much like to have close at hand. And these two editions are a part of that downstairs collection. So hope you enjoy the conversation with Joe Wallace.
Joseph Wallace, welcome to the bookshelf.
Thanks so much for having me.
So this is something new for you. You've done some very elegant books on baseball in the past, including the autobiography of baseball, the baseball anthology, all of these are coffee table editions. You've done one on the World Series. What made you want to go to the other side, shall we say?
I guess I always wanted to write fiction and had never found the subject that that sort of inspired me enough to write well enough to get published until I learned the story of Jackie Mitchell, the girl who struck out Babe Ruth, while researching one of my nonfiction baseball coffee table books that you've referred to. And the desire to tell a story that was different than the one that had actually happened sort of sent me into my only option, which was writing fiction.
Can you give us a brief synopsis of the book?
Of course. The Jackie Mitchell story that inspired it was this teenage girl who was a pitching phenom back during the Depression, enough of a phenom that she got signed by a men's team. The Yankees stopped by on their way home from spring training, and she struck out Babe Ruth, struck out Lou Gehrig, and was banned by Judge Landis just a few days later on the grounds, along with all women, on the grounds that the sport was too strenuous for them. And that was basically the end of the story. What I decided to do was write a novel about a girl, teenage girl with similar skills, though it is fiction, so she throws harder than I think the real Jackie Mitchell did. Almost everything else I created. I set this story in New York, mostly in Brooklyn, during the Roaring Twenties, mostly in 1923, which was the year that Yankee Stadium opened and the year that the Yankees won their first World Series and the year that the Coney Island Boardwalk opened and a lot of other things were going on. And it just seemed to make sense that if I was going to write a story about a girl who becomes famous for her ability to throw a baseball really hard, hard enough that she could actually play against men, that that was a time and place that would be a perfect place to set this book.
Now, how did you go about... Obviously, you're well-versed in doing research for your other books, but what was the research for something like this along the same lines? Was it more strenuous, less strenuous?
Yeah, that's a great question. And what I ended up doing with 1923, spring, summer, and fall, was going to the New York Public Library, where they have many New York newspapers on microfilm, and just going day by day throughout that year, or at least those 6 or 8 months, not in just one newspaper, but in about half a dozen different newspapers. By the time I was done with this, I felt like I was living inside this three-dimensional world of 1923. All the major stories were covered by all the newspapers, but the more minor stories, the interesting offbeat stuff, was different from paper to paper, and I felt like I learned so much that it wasn't really hard to take this created character and put her down in the middle of what felt like a very real world to me.
You mentioned all the different newspapers. Was it difficult to... You obviously wanted to make it as close to the actual story as possible. You never thought to make it a more contemporary setting, which might have made the research process a little easier?
I was very entranced by the idea of choosing another time when women's rights was very strong, and the 1920s was an incredible era for sort of strong women, whether it was athletes or politicians, and sort of a belief in equality that didn't really come back again until the 1960s. And it made it, to me, a really compelling time to place this young woman who, with a skill that didn't fit with, you know, the sort of judgments of the time. And in a way, it was more fun to set her then than it would be to make it more contemporary, because the press was just as active and aggressive, but it was, I don't know, more innocent. There wasn't the sort of burnout that you get so quickly. I mean, if somebody like Ruby showed up today, there would be so much coverage everywhere that I don't think there would be the chance to sort of develop her life the way I felt like I could do in the 1920s.
Now, you said that this is a teenage girl. Would you consider this novel one for young adults?
Well, the funny thing is that I probably get more pleasure out of hearing that teenagers, and even younger than teenagers, I've heard from 10 and 11-year-olds who have read the book, because they're interested in a book with this strong young girl at its center. But the book was not originally written with the young adult audience in mind, and wasn't marketed by my publisher for that audience, but they did put a page in the young adult catalog basically saying, well, if you're interested in this subject, you know, check out this book. So the answer is that I think they're trying to cross over, and as far as I'm concerned, it there's nothing in it that can't be read by young adults, but that's not who I was writing it for when I first was sitting down to write it.
Now, you mentioned crossing over. You have a website which is heavily concentrating on the book, and you're also doing a video project. Could you tell us a little about that?
Of course. I did, like many authors these days, as we all struggle to figure out how to survive in a publishing world that's changing every day, I decided to do a trailer for the book. I mean, it sort of serves as an advertisement, I guess, but or an introduction to the book. Many book trailers are very inexpensive and look and don't really make you want to pick up the book, so I decided to do something more elaborate and bring in professional filmmakers, and we did it in the form of a newsreel, like sort of introducing Ruby in the 1920s with archival footage as well as freshly shot footage. The reason I'm saying all of this is that I had so much fun doing it, and the response to it has been so strong that I decided, since I'm currently working on a follow-up to Diamond Ruby, to make these subsequent films that we just shot that basically tell you what happens after Diamond Ruby ends and before the sequel starts. So I thought that sort of having this original filmed content as sort of a sidecar to the books might be something that readers and viewers would be interested in. And since nobody else has done this, I have no idea if it's a good idea or not.
Well, we'll see. It sounds intriguing. And extending that a little farther, have you given any thoughts to making this into a movie?
Well, I do know that it was optioned for the movies by a company, a small company, and a screenwriter out in Hollywood. Nobody I've met face to face, though we've been in touch with via email. And I know that there are people who, you know, who believe in the book. I mean, to use that cliche, who had read the book and loved it and wanted to have the chance to make it into a movie. And I know, all I know is that they're having meetings with prominent people. But from what I've heard about Hollywood, meetings are cheap. So I don't sit around spending a whole lot of time dreaming that it could be a movie. But I know there's some people out there who think it would make a good one. So we'll see what happens.
The videos are using what kind of performers?
Well, we professional actors. I mean, the first one, the original trailer, the one that's up now on YouTube, though, you know, it's linked through my website. I found a young actress who I thought was brilliant from other things I'd seen her in, and suitable, at least in terms of manner and talent and look, though she's not nearly as sort of tall and lanky as Ruby was, so she's not a perfect match, but I thought she was a really strong, you know, had a really strong ability to portray the character as I saw her in my mind. For these follow-up films, we have a whole cast of these professional actors we found different places, because our filmmakers, the directors, is a husband and wife team who happen to live in my town, and they both have worked on many larger movie projects, and so they knew people who they could call in to be this more elaborate cast. It's really quite outside my usual comfort zone, so for me it's this exciting and sort of scary thing to be doing these films.
Now, you mentioned you've done the nonfiction and you've done the fiction, and you've been doing this again for a long time, and you talk about what an author has to do these days. Do you find that somewhat daunting, or you're up for the challenge?
Well, I think both. I mean, I think I'm up for the challenge in that I've been very, very active on Twitter and Facebook, and it's been revolutionarily good for the book. So much of what's happened with Diamond Ruby has been because of the connections I've made via social media. It's almost impossible to imagine what would have happened if I hadn't taken that plunge. At the same time, it is very daunting, because it feels like every day is a new learning curve as a writer. All these decades, well, I mean the 2 decades or so that I was doing my nonfiction writing, I'd write the book, I'd send it off, it would get some reviews, it would sell, and that was kind of the end of it. I'd be working on the next one. This sort of exposure and interaction is wonderful, but it's at the same time a little bit overwhelming, because you don't know how to divide your time, you know, when to spend writing and when to spend talking. I think it's a challenge for everybody out there now. It's not certainly not just me, but I'd be lying if I said that I wasn't daunted by it.
And where can listeners go to learn more about the book?
I guess my website's the best place. As you said, you know, when this book was coming out, I redesigned my website to focus. My nonfiction books, which I'm still really proud of, are there, but the website focuses mostly on Diamond Ruby, and it's www.josephwallace.com, which is, I guess, not a shock to hear, and everything you could possibly know, and links to the trailer and giveaways and who knows what, it's all there.
Very good. All right, Joseph, thank you very much for talking to the Bookshelf today, and good luck with the book.
Thank you so much.
And that was our conversation with Joseph Wallace. For more information on his book, visit josephwallace.com. That wraps up the interview portion of the program. Now I'll just mention a couple things I got in the mail recently. I received Encyclopedia of Baseball Statistics from A to ZR by Eric Blabick. It's a nice collection in one pretty big volume, more than 400 pages worth, I'm guessing, of the baseball statistics that have become prevalent these days. No more batting average, ERA, etc. Now it's all sabermetric, so that's a nice compendium to have. Also recently received Glory in the Fall, The Greatest Moments in World Series History, edited by Peter Gollenbach, a collection of writers' favorite World Series memories. Become a Facebook fan of the Bookshelf, and you're eligible for the Baseball Book of the Month. The next prize will be Pie Train or a baseball biography. And I guess that pretty much wraps it up. Trixie and Norton, my Senegals in the background, want to say goodbye. Say goodbye, boys. And, of course, now they're being quiet. Anyway, thanks for tuning into the Bookshelf, and there they go. Thanks for tuning into The Bookshelf. Visit us at ronkaplansbaseballbookshelf.com and tune in again soon for the next podcast installation.